Good morning, everyone, and welcome once again to our weekly Sunrise Project. All where it's always a safe space filled with love and light and energy and our mutual desire to heal ourselves, our children, our families. God grant me the serenity to accept the things I cannot change, the courage to change the things I can, and the wisdom to know the difference. And this morning, we have a really special guest. Her name is Coach Aziza Benti. She is a certified, an ICF certified success coach and certified Missouri peer specialist focused on empowering professionals to transform stress and anxiety, which we all have, into a superpower and transition into triumph. With both professional training and personal experience, which is so important because people here have real lived experience. I just want to mention that. It's so important to have the training and the guidance and all of those things, but the personal experience as well. So with both of those things, Coach Aziza helps others conquer stress and uncertainty to restore balance in their lives. In 2015, her recovery from paralysis following spine surgery marked a major breakthrough. Decades of chronic pain, anxiety, and depression transformed into a newfound perspective on anxiety, leading her to pursue a career in mental health and peer support. In 2021, Coach Aziza founded Choose Your Own Adventure Coaching, LLC. With over a decade of experience, she understands that even high achievers need help shifting. The overwhelming demands of work often lead to personal sacrifices and strained relationships, affecting work and the community. Coach Aziza is committed to showing leaders and healers what's possible in every area of their lives when mental saboteurs transform into allies as stress and anxiety become a superpower. Welcome, 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 Coach Aziza, and thank you for being here with us today. I know it's early where you're calling from, and we appreciate you being here this Sunday morning.
Yeah, it's
Welcome.
my pleasure. Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate it.
We are happy you're here, and I want to start with asking you to share your story, your journey. I know you were born in Kansas City and moved to St. Louis, but just share a bit about who you are. Like, take us back to how it all started, what your background is, and then how your journey has transformed to today.
Yeah, I will endeavor to be brief, as the pastors
And
usually say.
please don't worry about being brief. It's okay. We have time.
I try not to be before you long. But it's a long and winding road to this point. But I was born in KC and then moved here when I was little, and around when I was like 15 years old, I moved to Houston and lived there for several years, and then moved to Tampa and then Orlando, and then back to the Lou, which was an incredible journey. I really had no choice but to get away from whatever state my mother was living in. She did not accept that I was gay. She found out and then, exposed me to the whole family, and like that was a whole crazy thing. And I was like, man, I got to get out of here. And so I moved to,
How old were you when that happened?
I was about 21, about 20, 21. Yeah. And then I moved to Florida, and that was great. Had a wonderful experience there. Met a lot of cool people, all of the things, but I still was struggling a lot because I did not have the support that I needed from my mother. And I think, one of the things that there's many pieces to my story, but one of the things that when I was working with young adults and their parents years ago, one of the things I always remind them is just because your kids are adults, young adults, or very independent teens, they don't stop needing you. They start needing you differently.
That's
They
right.
don't need you like they needed you when they were 2, 3, 7, and 8, or 10. But now,
That's
as
right.
they're getting older and developing, like that relationship has to change. And parents have to grieve the loss of that shift.
That's right.
And that's not talked about enough, that there's a grieving process, that there's this challenge, especially for single parents, that grieving may be more intense, because this child or these children have been your singular focus almost. And so that shift can be really painful for a parent, incredibly painful for a parent, and also leaving a young person or an elder, older young adult feeling left out in the cold. There were so many things I didn't understand, I didn't know, and so many ways in which I was predatorily left in the cold, where, you know, I didn't know anything about taxes. I didn't know anything about credit. I didn't know, and man, I racked up all kinds of stuff because I didn't have anybody guiding me. I didn't have that relationship. My mother had disowned me.
Oh,
And
dear God.
so that was
That's so
really tough.
terrible. And I just want to acknowledge that because I can only imagine that pain and trauma of being disowned and feeling less than when you're the same as everybody else.
Yeah, I was the same, you know, same child she had all these years.
Yes.
And so things changed with that over the years. My mother, especially when I was, you know, suicidal at a point, she started to recognize, well, I'm going to lose my daughter completely if I don't make this shift, if I don't figure this out. And so things did get better for a time, which really was incredibly helpful. To me. When I moved back to St. Louis, that wasn't something I really had planned to do necessarily. I didn't think I'd ever move back, but I did. And that was the best decision that I ever made. I made that decision after a breakup and just couldn't figure out, like, you know, I was about 28. I'm like, I don't even know who I am for real. I don't really know what I need to do. And I moved back here, and the one of the first things I did was get on MySpace and meet this young woman who's my best friend now, Dr. Monique Maxey. And what was crazy is that she invited me out to some party, some lesbian party that they were having, and I had never been to a party by myself up until that time.
At 28,
Yeah, and the way my anxiety was set up, like, that was not something I was gonna do. And for whatever reason, I decided I was gonna do that. And I remember praying before I went, and I asked God, I said, you know what? I really want to find a group of really intelligent and dynamic lesbians to be friends with. I had no gay friends. I was 28, didn't have any gay friends. The only people I talked to was whoever I dated. Like, that was it. And so I went to this party and it literally changed my life. These folks that I met at that time are still my friends now.
That's awesome. And your tribe, and your tribe, because you didn't have a tribe. You have one person, one-on-one
They are
relationships.
my people.
That's wonderful.
Yeah. So when
So
you say
that changed
tribe,
your life moving back at 28 to St. Louis. And so, and you really, and did your mother re-embrace
So
you at that point?
that has still been very interesting. Even at this time, this date right now, there is estrangement with my mother and I. But we did reconnect for a time, and that was helpful because I was able to realize that there was some sexual abuse that took place when I was younger that I had been having nightmares about. I thought they were dreams. And by having a conversation with my mother, she was able to corroborate many of the details in the dream to determine it was not a dream. These were memories of what had happened. So that was a pivotal part of my journey, breaking that open and understanding, wait, that really did happen to me. That is the reason why whenever I would see that person's family, I would just get so. I would, it was PTSD. Like, I would just completely lose it. I couldn't think straight. I couldn't see. My ears would ring. And I never understood why I had such a visceral reaction to that person, to those people. And so, her being able to corroborate that story and saying that she was so sorry that that happened, that was a pivotal piece, too, because I thought I was just crazy. And I realized a lot of the depression and the anxiety, a lot of that was rooted in those experiences. And so that was helpful. And I
Helpful for
started,
her to apologize finally. That's
yeah,
what you're
it was
saying.
helpful for
Helpful
her
for her to
to,
acknowledge.
because she didn't know that it had happened. She
I
knew,
see.
to my mother's credit, I asked her, why did you take me away from that babysitter? Because like I remember being babysat there, and the woman was very abusive to me once my mother left, and I was told I had to lie when my mother got home. And it was her son that had assaulted me. And my mother said, the little Ziza I dropped off wasn't the Ziza I brought home. And so she stopped working, and was a stay-at-home mom for a time until I was old enough to start kindergarten. And then my brothers would take me to school and bring me back and all of that. And that's what broke me. Like when she said that, I was like, so this really did, because I remember thinking to myself, something happened to me. Like I went through a door. I literally went through a door because I went into this boy's room, but I went into a door, and whoever I was on the other side of that door was completely different than who I was when I went in.
And she knew.
And so for her to say that without me saying that to her, it validated that, yes, you're right. That really did happen to you. You're not making it up. It's not just a recurring dream. It's a recurring memory that you're having.
Well, I'm glad you got to that point with your
Oh,
mom,
yeah.
but I hate that you're still estranged somewhat, as you said,
Yeah.
but hopefully over time
Yeah.
it'll,
We will
it'll
see.
all work itself out. God is
Yeah.
gonna work it all out
Yeah.
the way it's supposed to. So how did you start, how did you become a success coach, and how did you start working in this space in general, in this mental health space?
Yeah,
'Cause that,
so that journey is wild. So, in my 20s, I was in a car accident when I moved to Florida, and following that, I had just a lot of chronic pain, back and neck, and all of that for many, many years. And it wasn't until my 30s that I got any real help for it. And during that time, I had to have spine surgery because they determined, they were like, look, we're gonna have to give you spine surgery. That's it. There's nothing else we can do. Because I had tried so much stuff up until that point that did not work. And prior to that, when I first got to St. Louis, like I said, I met this group of amazing women. Well, they had a lesbian poetry night once a month. And so it's called Sister Speak. And so, for
Love that.
whatever reason, I'm gonna say whatever reason, but actually, what I'm saying is God had me go buy a video camera, because prior to that, I had no idea to do this. Go get a video camera, go get a digital camera, and I started filming and photographing these events every month.
The
And
poetry, lesbian
yeah, the
poetry.
poetry events, and then like talking to the people backstage, and I'm around all these people, and although I was so panicked and anxious and nervous, I still did it. And I did it for a number of years. And that helped me to get comfortable also being in front of the camera, because to help other people get comfortable being in front of the camera, I had to get comfortable. That also helped me get comfortable with presenting and connecting with people. And so when I had spine surgery, I was told it was just going to be like a quick surgery, a couple hours maybe, and that I was going home that day, that pain, I wasn't going to be in the tremendous pain I had been in for all those years. I was so excited. I was like, yeah, that's what's up. This is amazing. I can get back out here and keep doing my filming, because at this point I was in knee deep in a documentary film on social justice, and I was like, yeah, I'm ready to do the things. And when I woke up and they were talking to me, everybody was around my bed and they were so excited, and my surgeon is showing me his phone and pointing to the picture and saying, you're gonna be in the Journal of Medicine. Like, we had to do a surgery we've never done before, and part of the soft tissue had actually turned to bone, and we had to chisel it out. I'm like, yo, what are y'all talking about? And so then the nurse says, can you feel that? And I'm like, feel what? And then the surgeon, like, it's like the blood drained out of his face. And he's like, you can't feel that? And I'm like, feel what?
Right.
And I'm like, why am I upside down? Because that's the other thing. I was tilted back. And what I knew from that was that they probably had to sew up my dura. The dura is this thin layer between where your spinal fluid is behind it. And I had done enough research to know about that. And I was like, wait a minute. Is there a spinal leak? Why am I upside down? What's going on? And then I start hyperventilating. Once that ends, I realize the surgical team realizes, my mother, my best friend realize I am paralyzed from the waist down. That was not an outcome of the surgery that I was told to expect. Following that was really a very, very difficult time because I'm like, I'm in my 30s. Man, I was so angry with God. Like, that was my biggest anger. I was like, yo, you told me that I was going to help people around the world. You told me that I was going to, and I thought it was tied to film and photography. And so for that to seemingly be taken away, because the other thing was, it wasn't just that I was paralyzed waist down, my hands shook like this. And the doctor didn't know what, like, nobody knew what, one, I wasn't supposed to be paralyzed. Two, why are your hands shaking? They're like, he didn't know what to do. He's a young surgeon. It's his last year in Missouri. He's getting ready to end his residency and go to North Carolina. And I'm his final surgery. And I remember, like, I kept asking for him to come back to the room. And for days, like, he just did not show up. They were like, oh, we're going to send a message out. I'm like, where? I said, yo, he need to get in here. We need to talk. Finally, when I got him on the phone, he still didn't come by. He yells at me because I said, what is the prognosis, doctor? And he says, Aziza, I don't have a prognosis. We don't know. We don't know what's going to happen. I said, say, man. You got a lot of bass in your voice for somebody who paralyzed. I'm paralyzed, man. Like, who are you talking to? Later we had a meeting and discussed it, and he apologized. He said, I was so scared because I promised you a lot and I intended for all those things to happen. And I've never had to do this surgery before. And I reminded him, I said, you told me your father had to have spine surgery. And his father is also a spine surgeon. I said, if your father's surgeon talked to him the way you talked to me, how would you feel? He said, oh, I want to fight him. And I said, yeah.
That's right.
Because of two of us, one of us is way more scared than the other. I can't walk. And I can't hold a camera to save my life. And I'm thinking my life is over. And one of the interesting things that happened late one night, I was laying in the bed and I was so angry with God. I was just like, oh God, you just lied. Maybe there really isn't a God, all these things. And I had this vision. I looked off into the corner of the room and I saw all these colors and this energy and it was moving away from me. And I just started screaming and crying. I was like, you're taking everything from me. And it wasn't until years later, standing in a room with some young adults. This was after I became a certified Missouri peer specialist. This was after I'd had an opportunity to work to make the most I'd ever made in my career and working as a coach. And I'm standing in front of these young people and I'm telling them my story. And a tear starts to fall. And I realize that God wasn't pulling things away from me. He was trying to pull me toward these things because I looked in the room and the same energy that I felt in that bed while I was laying there and looking and seeing all those colors, that's what was in the room. And I looked around at these young people and I
With
said,
the young people.
I have known you before you were in your mother's womb. Your energy has been so present with me my entire life. Because remember, they're all younger than me. And they start crying. And after they tell me, when I saw you, Miss Aziza, they would call me, Miss Aziza, I feel like I know you, like I've always known you. And so when you said that made me cry. And so it was so powerful to understand in that moment that sometimes you do feel like everything is being ripped away from you. And it could just be that everything is pulling you toward, it's pulling you in the direction that you are designed to actually flow. So that was also a life-changing moment for me.
That's huge. So your that moment that had the same energy that felt like it was being pulled away in the hospital room, you had this experience with these young people. And so that spine surgery ultimately shaped, you started to work with young people and help others.
Had I not been paralyzed and had to consider that maybe there was going to be a different career path for me, I never would have pursued coaching or anything. Like I was dead set. Oh, I'm going to be, this amazing documentary filmmaker and photographer, and this is what's going to happen. And da da da. Like I was convinced of that was absolutely my journey. And now, having been a coach for over 10 years, like I can't imagine doing anything else now. Like I love what I do, and I love that film and photography helped me to be prepared to do this and to do it even better. And so I see the intricacies of how God works and how the universe works and how all things are, it's always working together for my good. I firmly believe that and have lived my life rooted in that. And I want to say too, the other thing that spine surgery did for me is when I finally was able to regain my ability to walk, it still was pretty rocky. I was on a walker, I was sent home, and I was in excruciating pain. The pain was so bad, I literally clawed the walls at night. Like it was horrible. And I remember one night, it was especially difficult because when I had asked the surgeon, like, what happened during the surgery? How did it go? Like, I was retract my back was retracted for a long time and exposed to air and all of these things. And that's an assault on the most intimate parts of my body that don't normally get exposed to light or air or anything. And so I remember laying there and crying out to my body and saying, I love you. Thank you. I'm so sorry you were hurt, my dear. I'm so sorry this happened. I love you. You're so strong. You're doing your best. I know nerves. You don't know what to do. You've been exposed. I know this is scary. And that went on for probably 8 or 10 hours, just praying over my body, speaking life into my body. I had never, up until that point, been as kind to me. Ever. I'd never talked to me the way I talk to people. I was never as kind to me as I was to another. And so spending those sustained hours until I literally just passed out from the pain, because the pain never let up. That's the other part. Because people love that story and they're like, oh, and then the pain went away. I'm like, nah,
No.
it did not go away. Not that pain, not that pain,
Not that pain.
but that pain of not loving oneself, not knowing oneself, not being connected to oneself, really, that started to shift and change. And that was part of the beginning of a true healing journey. I'd been in therapy before. That had helped some with the anxiety and depression. I'd had a best friend let me know that I had broken her heart by the way that I talk about myself and to myself. And so I realized I needed to heal to make her feel better. I didn't heal to make me better. But eventually I was doing it for me. And so this was another part of that healing journey. A pastor told me that I was going through a dark night of the soul. And that's what it felt like. It was a shift in my relationship with God. He no longer was a genie. I had realized that my relationship with God was that she was a genie. I say my prayer and then you answer. That's what we do.
That's right.
Right?
I love
Somebody's sick, you
that.
pray they get healed. Somebody hurt, you pray they die. I say this and then you make it happen. And then if not, then I feel like maybe I'm not good enough and maybe God doesn't love me. This, it was so transactional. And this changed all of that for me. And it then became a collaborative relationship. And so I then began to look to God, how do I collaborate with you to help the most people, to inspire the most people, to encourage the most
Excellent.
people? I wanted to do it through film, but how do I do it with you? How do I really lock in here?
And that crazy pain, that
Oh,
intense,
yeah.
intense, intense pain, it started with talking to yourself. Someone said speaking life into yourself. And you talked about being a friend to yourself, and you had never done that before. So talking to yourself with love, that's so key. And then that pain, which never went away, at some point transitioned to this life that's
Purpose.
full of purpose.
Purpose.
Yes, from pain to purpose.
Yeah,
And
it
so
went to
now you
purpose.
walk in this journey, and I want to talk about two things. One, I want to make sure we talk about the topic, because
Yeah.
you have this intriguing concept around turning saboteurs into superpowers. And so can you share what that means?
Yeah, absolutely.
And then we can go from there. I have another question about how we can do better as parents.
Yeah.
But let's talk about saboteurs into superpowers. What does that mean?
So we all have saboteurs, mental saboteurs. There are 10 of them that have been identified. And much of this is rooted in Shirzad Charmaine's work with positive intelligence. And so basically, in the human brain, there is the amygdala. So I'm going to dip a little bit into my neuroscience bag. So there is the amygdala in the brain, and that part of the brain is very, very small. And when you find out what it does, or if you know what it does, thank God it's very small. But it's about the size of a pea in the shape of an almond, and it is the survival part of the brain. It is a very old and ancient part of the brain that's been passed down for thousands of years. And its job is to determine when there is danger, when there is threat. That part of the brain, ironically, is also where emotions are generated. And so when you got threat and then high emotion, woo, that's a wild time. And so there are these archetypes of different parts of this particular part of our brain. We have 10 of those, the number one being the judge. And the judge saboteur determines what other saboteurs are going to hijack us. And some of the names of these saboteurs are the hypervigilant, the stickler, hyperachiever, controller, hyperrational, victim, pleaser, and restless. And so, depending on the threat that is identified, different saboteurs can show up. And those saboteurs are trained through our childhood experiences or severely traumatic adult experiences that we have. And so they get locked in that things are a certain way, and that in order for you to be safe, they've got to be activated. They've got to be in control, or you're going to screw it up. You're not going to be okay. You're not going to get out of this okay. This thing is horrible and cannot be undone. That is sort of the way that they roll. They're also binary. They see things as really, really good or really, really bad. Nothing in the middle. And so they can be very dangerous to us, especially when we don't know that it is a saboteur experience that we're having. When we start to think we are the saboteur, we say, I'm just a hyperachiever. I'm just anxious. I'm just this. Like when we identify that we are this part of us versus we are experiencing this part of us. And so, in order to turn those saboteurs into superpowers, we have to access our sage brain. And our sage brain exists in the prefrontal cortex. It's the front part of our brain, and it's much, 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 much bigger. And this brain is able to access things like hope and faith and love. This is our core being. This is who we are. This is who we've been designed to be. And there are five sage powers. They are explore, empathize, navigate, innovate, and activate. And these sage powers help us to identify when there's a saboteur experience happening, so that we can by at that point, so that we can shift into sage and see how this experience can benefit us, see how we can experience deep empathy for ourselves and others, and see how we can grow through this pain that we are experiencing that's brought on by the saboteurs. So that's really the basis for this particular, I guess we could maybe co even consider it a healing modality because it is connected with several different pieces of mental health awareness. So it's connected with CBT, cognitive behavioral therapy, DBT, dialectical behavior therapy, positive psychology, and a number of other modalities, even mindfulness and Eastern philosophy.
That is really powerful. I'd love to have you explore, share with us. Many of us are parents on the call. And so if we have a tendency to be in that judge space or that controlling space with our children, can you share how to transition? Like, what would be a way to transition from that judging, controlling space? I heard some of those words that you listed, to being more empathetic and to being in that sage brain space. Can you share what that would look like?
So the first step is awareness. When we are not aware that it is a saboteur at work, we think it's just us or we think it's them. There are three things we're going to think it is because that's how the judge works. It's either me, something's wrong with me, I'm jacked up. Something's wrong with you jacked up, the other person, or something's wrong with this circumstance. This circumstance is bad, right? And one of the analogies that we use is the hot stove. It's important when you touch a hot stove, as soon as you touch it, you pull your hand back, right? And you're like, ooh, that hurt. But nothing actually happened. Your skin has not experienced any true damage. What happened is the pain sensation came to keep you from experiencing more damage, to keep you from having something go through the first and second and third layer of skin. But there's been no damage. When you look at your hand, it's fine. And so, but if you were to keep your hand on that hot stove, just looking around like, I don't know what, I don't know why my hand is hurting like this. It's probably just because I'm crazy. You know, it's probably just because my son is just, oh my God, he's out of control. It's probably just because I'm a bad parent. Girl, if you don't get your hand, sir, if you don't get your hand off that stove, right? So the pain is to indicate something's off. It's not to indicate push your hand down further into the pain.
That's right.
Right. And so once we become aware, it's like, ah, and there are two ways that it goes usually.
That's
So I'm going to give you some examples of that. So we've got
right.
the first person, we touched the hot stove. Woo, ooh, that's hot. Okay. I completely forgot that it's only been a couple minutes since I turned that stove off. You know what? I'm going to clean the stove a little bit later. Let me go ahead and focus on these dishes instead. I'll do the stove last and give it some more time because I don't want to have that happen again. That's a more of a sage way to look at it, okay? Now, a saboteur way to look at it. Now, God, I'm so stupid. I swear. How did I even forget that? My mind is so scattered. I do this every time. So stupid. You know what? I shouldn't even have a stove. My so-and-so was right. My mother was right. My cousin was right. My who? I'm so dumb. I can't even wash dishes. I'm surprised I didn't burn my hand in the water. That's a saboteur mindset. It's keeping you mentally, your hand is on a hot stove because that beginning piece just said, hey, I need an awareness. I need to shift. But instead, the hand is like it got pressed further into the heat because you're beating yourself up. You're saying, oh, I'm so stupid. Or, oh, or you might be mad at somebody else. Why didn't y'all tell me that this stove was still hot? This is what I'm talking about. Da, 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 da. So it can go all of those different ways. And so we want awareness to be the key, being aware, you know what? I'm operating out of. I'm experiencing a lot of judgment right now. I'm afraid for
Right.
my child, and I'm trying to alleviate some of that through control. Because we'll use other saboteurs to try to take the heat off that we're experiencing with a different saboteur. But you're just moving your hand around the same stove. You're just moving
The
your hand.
same stove.
Yeah, it's still hot. Yeah.
Right. It's the negative self-talk, or it's the negative talk to the other person that's involved in the situation,
Yeah.
versus that last piece of being aware and moving into the sage brain and not having the negative overlay. Correct. Okay.
Absolutely.
Wow. That's so deep. I want to make sure, because we can talk for hours. I can see that. We have people on that may want to ask a question directly to you. So if they want to come off of mute, feel free. Anybody, if you want to ask a question or have a comment for Coach Aziza, this is so deep. And I want to,
Love
before we
questions.
go there, back to this whole parenting piece. You talked about, I think it was grieving. We need to grieve the transition when they're out of the home or have moved on. And how can parents prepare for that? How can parents do that when there's this shift, or when children are growing, they're graduating from high school, they're getting out of high school, and they're moving on to whatever's next? How can parents do that? How can parents prepare for that?
Yeah, the first step again is that awareness. Even being aware that that may happen for you is something new for a lot of parents. Like they had not heard that, there's some grieving from when that child goes from being a baby to daycare, if they're going to go to daycare or preschool or middle school. Not understanding that that will happen, that there's going to be this twinge, this shifting. Is usually going to be the very first step, that awareness that that will happen or that it is happening. So for many parents here on this call, it's already happened or it's currently happening. There's nothing wrong with you. There's nothing bad that is happening in that moment. When you start to notice that maybe you're doubling down on the control, which makes sense because look at the society, look at all the different things that are happening. Young people are getting pulled into sex trafficking and drugs, and there's all these things, there's all these threats. Remember that part of the brain responsible for threat detection is on high alert right now, especially with this current administration. So it's on high alert. And so it's going to activate these different saboteurs. That hypervigilant saboteur is going to be really high. And so understanding that that's going to happen and leaning in and getting curious about what you are experiencing, that awareness of that particular saboteur is key. Okay, man, I can feel a lot of controller energy. Not that you are controlling. You don't want to identify yourself with those things. Be careful what you call yourself. As we know,
Right.
we speak over ourselves. We are casting spells with what we say we are. Experiencing anxiety and being anxious are two different things. Experiencing a controller saboteur and being a controller are two different things. We all experience these saboteurs. That's normal. That's human. You're allowed. And we want to have that awareness in the beginning, understanding that this is even happening and leaning in and being honest with yourself about that. And also approaching conversations with your children, identifying that too. I understand that you want X, Y, and Z. I do hear you. I also want to make sure that we're both understanding each other. One, make sure you fully understand where your child is coming from. Because especially if they are a young adult, they may be your child, but they are not a child.
Right.
And that was some
That's
of the
right.
difficulty my mother and I experienced. I am not a child. I'm your child, but I'm not a child.
That's a wonderful
So,
nuance to remember.
yes. So leaning into really making sure you really understand, seek first to understand, really understand where your child is coming from. Don't just spend the whole time talking about what it was like for you. What it was like for you is gone. That world doesn't even exist that same way anymore. Things are different
Right.
now.
Absolutely.
And you can't understand it exactly the way your child understands it because you're not them. As much as you might identify with them because they came from your body, they are
Right.
still their own autonomous selves. And so are you. And so seeking to understand where they are coming from first, and then once you know that it's clear that you do get it, and also that emotions are not too high. Trying to do this while emotions are high, you can forget it. Because both of y'all
Right.
saboteurs are gonna be turned on. Everybody, and then their
Right.
saboteurs will activate your saboteurs and yours will activate theirs, and then you got a whole saboteur hijacking contagion situation.
Right.
You don't
Oh,
want that.
mess. That's
Yeah.
right.
So you want
That's
to
right.
pick a neutral time and space to have a conversation with your child once you're sure that you really do understand them, and ask for clarification. Make sure, be like, okay, so what I'm hearing is, let them tell you, like, yes, that's what I'm saying. Exactly. You're like, okay, so do you feel like I get what you're saying? Ask them if they feel like you understand. If they're
Right.
like, no, okay, well, help me. What more do I need to know? If they say yes, okay, great. So I'm hearing what you're saying. And one of the things that's ex I'm experiencing right now is this is pretty scary for me as your mom. This is really scary for me as your dad because X, Y, and Z is going on and I'm worried. And sometimes I feel like I don't have enough control to protect you. Let that
That's
sit
right.
in the room, and what they'll probably say is, I don't need you to protect me.
That's
And
right.
you can say, I hear that. And I love you so much. And this is
Right.
why this is happening. Like, I get that I love you. And also, I'm scared. That fear is kind of getting in the way. We need to call those things out and have those conversations with our children. And we're also demonstrating, because this is also about demonstration. A lot of times we want for our children to have certain attributes that we don't demonstrate to them regularly. And we need to demonstrate the act of seeking to understand before seeking to be understood.
That's it.
We need to show up that way regularly. And then when we don't, because you will not get this, you will not do this every single time. So just throw that out the window that you're gonna screw some stuff up. It's totally okay. You need to understand that it's okay to go to your child and say, you know what? I was really upset earlier. That wasn't okay the way I said X, Y, and Z. I wasn't listening to you. I'm gonna be honest. I really wasn't. And if you're going to apologize, know that saying sorry and apologizing are two different things. Saying sorry is expressing sorrow. I'm sorry that you're sick. I'm not apologizing you're sick. Hell, I didn't make you sick. I'm sorry you broke your leg and can't work this week. I'm expressing sorrow.
Yes.
An apology is
That's right.
a statement of responsibility. An acknowledgement
Yes.
of what I intend to do to mitigate this and to make sure that it doesn't happen again to the best of my ability. Sorry is not that. So
That's
if you're
right.
going to just say sorry and then you're like, well, I don't know, they were still upset, probably because nothing changed. You're expressing
Right.
sorrow. Or if you say, I'm sorry if I hurt you. When it's clear that you hurt them, take the
That's
if
right.
out
Right.
and take the sorry out. I apologize for saying something that hurt your feelings.
That's right. That's good.
Knowing those are slight differences, but they're huge as far as being on the receiving end of that and being a child, being the child of a parent who is saying, you know what?
That's right.
I apologize. That wasn't okay. I should have talked to you about that later. You had just got in the house. I had
Yes.
just got home. I was frustrated from work. That was not the best time for me to try to have a conversation with you about the state of your bedroom or about what you're going to do about school or about whatever. That wasn't the best time for
Right.
me to have that conversation. Let's talk a little bit later today. Is that okay? That's a genuine
I love that.
apology, and that's a genuine bridge, and that's also you demonstrating what this will look like, because we want our children to apologize too when they realize that they're wrong.
That's fine.
Mom, Dad, I was upset when I got home from school, and then when you asked me had I cleaned my room, I just got so angry, and it wasn't your fault, and I'm sorry, and I shouldn't have done that. That wasn't okay. We want them to say that,
That's
but
right.
we need to demonstrate it too.
We have to model it. Absolutely. I love that. And I think even if it's not a specific example today or with somebody that's in the home, it could be an older, it could be an adult child, but there's still an opportunity to apologize for all the things that may have hurt them or that we have done that hurt them in the past. And then say, to your point, I love you. And, here's what I'm going to focus on moving forward. I think that's beautiful.
I want to say this too. It's important to pay attention to what you tack, because I love you with, like what you connect those two
Yes.
with. Because if you are yelling at your child and then say you're coming back to apologize, but it's really just, I'm sorry. You're like, I'm sorry, but I love you. You done said, but you negating stuff.
All right.
You were talking about I love you, and it's with something that was violent, maybe not physically violent, but violent in tone and action. You are training that child to believe that that's what love looks like. Be very mindful of how you use the word love when disciplining a child, when communicating with your child, whether that child is a very young child or they are older. Be mindful of how you are using that. Because
That's
if
right.
you're saying that's love, and then you later see them in relationships where people talking to them slick, and then you're like, I don't know how my child ever got like,
That's
for
what you
real, you
did.
don't know,
That's what
you
they
don't
learned.
know, you don't know, you programmed their amygdala. Remember, I told you about that little pea-shaped size of the brain, which is also connected to who? Emotions. So you programmed that little piece of brain. That's what love is. Control is love. Dominance is love. Okay? Being rude, being sharp, explaining away the reasonings for what you did is love. My intention supersedes your experience. No, if I didn't intend to hurt you and I did, my intention doesn't matter. Matters is how we repair the relationship from right now. I am sorry I hurt you. That was not okay for me to speak to you that way. That wasn't okay for me to throw that thing away without talking to you about it first. You have your reasons, you have your intention. Cool. But if I have a blindfold on and I have scissors in my hand, and I know that those scissors could poke someone, and I'm in the kitchen and somebody backs up and they get poked by those scissors and they go, ow, that hurt me, man, I'm bleeding. Well, I didn't mean to poke you. Well, they're still bleeding. So your intention doesn't heal.
The experience.
It does
What
not heal the
happened?
experience. How you show up once that experience is identified. If I say, I am so, you know what? That was wrong for me to be carrying those scissors out like that. I should have held them closer to my body. I should have paid attention to who was in the room. I'm going to make sure that I do that next time that I put the scissors in a sleeve so that I don't hurt you like that again.
I
That
love that.
is how we want to show up.
That right there. Boom. That's the answer right there. You have so many incredible gems this morning, but that is really powerful. And I know there are probably people that may want to comment or have a question. I just want to give people the opportunity to do that, because it's approaching our end time,
Yeah,
believe
we
it or
almost
not.
out of time.
We are. So if anybody has a comment or a question or you want to come off of mute, there's been such rich dialogue in the chat as well. Any questions, thoughts? Anybody want to say anything? You're feel free. I'm looking to see.
Yeah, I was scrolling through the chat too to see. I see lots of comments, so thank you guys.
Lots of comments. People are saying how incredible you are and what a wonderful
Well, I
gem.
appreciate
So
y'all.
good. So good. I really think I agree. I agree. And I think that the distinction between the apology and saying I'm sorry is also really helpful. Really helpful.
I did see a
And giving the
question.
word. Oh, you do see a question? Yes.
I see one from Vicky earlier asking, how do we collaborate with God? That's the question.
Yes.
In terms of collaborating with God, one of the things that I do is even the willingness. Like, willingness is the biggest thing. I always tell my clients, I only need one thing from you. And I always ask them, what do you think the one thing is? And they name all kinds of stuff. And I'm like, nope, it's willingness. Because if you are unwilling, then we got nowhere to go. Like, there's nothing we can do. So being willing to go into that conversation with God, whether you're doing that in journal or you're doing that in prayer or going for a walk or just sitting by a lake or sitting, in the middle of your floor, sitting on the couch, wherever you happen to be, and really leaning in and saying, I want to collaborate with you. Make it clear in a way that I cannot deny, even if I want to, the clearest direction for me to focus my energy in. Help me to see it as you see it in the most gentle way possible. Please do not forget to add the words in the most gentle way possible. My friends and I have been praying this prayer for years, and one friend about 8 years ago was like, you know what? I added something to the prayer we talked about, and it's in the most gentle way possible. Now, that don't mean it's gonna be gentle, but it's gonna be gentler.
I love
And it
that.
might have been otherwise, because baby, it'll seem like you got slapped upside the forehead with a brick.
That
So you want to
is
make
the
sure you
truth.
add that little piece on there. So, it's a little more gentle. But what you're asking God is, I'm asking my creator right now to help me see
Yes.
it as they do, as clearly as they do, experience it.
Yes.
And asking for my mind to be shifted and focused in that direction. Because a
Yes.
lot of times we pray that we want a thing to happen, but the thing could happen.
Yes.
But if your mind is still, let's say these glasses, right? If I'm saying I want to see blue, but I have red tinted glasses, the circumstances could change. There could be a lot of blue in the room, but I can't see it because the lens through which I'm looking. So we want it's the renewing of your mind that
That's
has to
right.
happen first. So asking for that support and asking for our creator to help us to see things the way they see it, that part is really key.
The way they see it with clear lenses, without those colored lenses. And so that part is powerful when you just talked about the blue lenses or the red lenses. But I love that. And I think being gentle with ourselves, you talked a lot about that earlier, how important that is.
Yeah,
Because
and
you talked about
accepting.
judging yourself for a long
Yes.
time.
We're gonna make mistakes. One of the things I always say, it's a book by Kyle Cease, and I love it. And it's called I Hope I Screw This Up. And
Okay.
before I got on here today, I remember I was like, oh, everything's gonna be okay. And I was like, no, I hope I screw this up. And what that means is, I hope I make some mistakes because that will help me. Like, I hope I forget to say something. So then that will help me some kind of way. Like, it's okay. Go in with the idea, I hope I screw this up. I hope it goes as wrong as it could possibly go, because it really doesn't ever go wrong. It
Never.
always goes right for you, because even when it looks like it's wrong, it's always helping you some kind of way.
It's
Kelly,
always perfect and it's always
thank you for putting
divine.
that in the chat.
Oh, sure. I put the Amazon link in the chat.
Yeah,
I hope I
I
screw
love
this
Kyle
up.
Cease. Yeah, I hope I
Oh,
screw this up. I also
and
want
it's
to make sure
Kyle. Oh, no,
Kyle
please go ahead.
Cease.
C's Kyle and
Can't
then
remember how to spell.
CEASE if somebody is. I'm look
Yeah.
CE. I'll put the name in here.
Awesome.
Author is Kyle C's. And how can people reach you? If and are you taking new clients? Are you working with people? How can we do that?
So people can find me. It's easy enough. It's just my name.com, azizabenti.com. Real simple. We're easy.
Okay.
I would love for you all, for everybody on the call, to take a saboteur assessment. There is a way for you to take it's a free saboteur assessment. What I love about it is it gives you an opportunity to learn more about the mental saboteurs that we all have. And also it looks at like the last, I believe it's like the last 48 hours of your life, what's been going on, and for you to be able to see which saboteurs are rising to the top, which saboteurs are rising to the top, that may be impacting you right now. Yeah, they
I
might
love
be
it.
impacting you right now.
And
So I love that
I love
assessment. I take it every few months myself because it changes depending on what's going on with your life. And I also want to caution you, do not take it more than once a day. There is no more than once every few months. Don't try to retake it again and try to get a better quote unquote
that.
score. It's not a test. It's an assessment and you
An
can't get it
assessment.
wrong. Okay.
We can't get
So
it
don't
wrong
keep
and be
taking it.
gentle on ourselves and be gentle on ourselves when it
Yes.
says we're off the chart
Yes.
controlling or whatever it says,
Yeah.
pleasing or what have you. Wow. Well, this has been so phenomenal. I do want to encourage everybody to go to azizabinti.com. And if you're calling in, it's AZIZA, B like boy, IN like Nancy, TI.com. And there's an assessment right on the homepage. It says, take the get your free saboteur assessment here. I'm going to do it right now myself.
Awesome.
And we would love to have you back at some point. You are phenomenal,
Well, thank you. I
so
appreciate
incredible and wise and beautiful and kind and all of the things. So I just want to say thank you for being here this morning with us and our community. And thank you to Tracy for introducing us to you.
Yes, my sis,
And
Tracy Berry McGee.
love Tracy. And
Yes.
I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Vicky before, because we are out of time, but I'm going to turn it over to Dr. Vicky to close us out in a prayer this morning. Thank you so much again.
Thank you.
Hi, Aziza. I was like, stop calling me out because I would be the one to take the assessment like three times. Like, that's all right. So let me do it again. This was phenomenal. So thank you so much for saying yes, and we would love to have you back. So let's pray. God, we thank you for this amazing day, this amazing experience with Aziza. Thank you for the insight, the wisdom, the guidance, the practicality of what has been shared today. Thank you for sending her to help us. Oh my goodness. Activate our sage brains. And we are so grateful for the opportunity, another chance to do better with ourselves and with our children and in this community. Bless her business. Continue to bless the Sunrise Project. We thank you and we give you glory, honor, and praise. In Jesus' name, we do pray. Amen. Thank you so much, Coach Aziza. Thank you.
It's been a pleasure. I appreciate all of you all. Thank you for inviting me. This was amazing. So, yeah.
You are amazing. We're grateful for you. Have an incredible day, everybody. Enjoy the weather if you're somewhere where there's sun shining. And we're just grateful. Grateful to be here. Grateful for you. Grateful for our community. Have a beautiful day. We'll be back next week at 9 o'clock Eastern. Take care.
Bye-bye.
And thank you.